Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of Speak Beastie for April 10th, 2016. I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Eleanor.
Ladies night.
Ladies.
Yeah, Aaron's not here because he's covering the Wizarding World opening or whatever.
Like, we even care about that?
He's hanging out with Tom Felton yesterday. It's whatever.
No. He's not going to be on the show anymore for obvious reasons.
Yeah, we just fired him.
We said, you can't.
You need to sort out your priorities.
Just a reminder that we are on Patreon.com and we've revamped our awards. So Patreon, you can donate from $1 to $5 per month and become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us bring more episodes about Newt's fantastic world. Rewards include access to bloopers. There are a lot of those. Extended conversations, and you can help decide on future discussion topics. So thank you to all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Apparently we reached our first goal.
We did. We hit $20 a week. Or a month. I'm sorry, right. A month. $20 a week. We're rich. No.
So if you keep donating, our next goal is to get merchandise.
Which is,
we know what everyone wants.
Yeah, duh.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
You want my face on a t-shirt.
It's just Ariel's face.
Yeah. I would buy that.
So check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor.
Yeah. And now for the Phoenix Register. It's been kind of a slow news week, but we did recently have April Fools, and we got some people with some good stuff. Mr. Keith posted that the Fantastic Beasts release date was going to be pushed back to June 2017 with recasting to blame.
We made some folks mad.
Oh, we did. We got a few people. I remember even seeing this on my timeline. People were like, no, this is so disappointing. And I'm just sitting there laughing like, you don't even know. Check your calendar. So, good job on Keith for that Fantastic Beasts related April Fool's joke. And even if you'll read the comments, people, one person said, I got really angry and then I started laughing. So at least they had a good spirit about it.
Someone wrote, grab your pitchforks, man the barricades, send your howlers, ... and then look at the calendar.
Yeah. Another April Fool's joke we managed to pull off with the help of our awesome guest host, Michael Harley, who voiced both Umbridge and Filch. If you listen to the bonus episode, O Norris, My Norris, you won't believe that it's him.
No, you won't.
At all. And you especially wouldn't believe that it's one person doing both of these voices. So
he's incredible.
Holla at your boy, Michael, who did a good job. A better than good. He did a fantastic job.
Wink, wink.
So just be sure to check out the Fantastic Beasts section on MuggleNet.com to see both the April Fool's article and the bonus episode, O Norris, My Norris. For other news, which does us absolutely no good as we record on this Thursday evening, a new Fantastic Beasts clip will be premiering on the day that this episode will be coming out for the MTV Movie Awards, and Eddie Redmayne himself will actually be presenting the clip. So if you're listening to this episode right now, make sure you watch the MTV Movie Awards later tonight and watch our boy Newt as he presents the Fantastic Beasts clip, and then we'll all talk about it here in a few weeks' time. But if you have any comments until then, be sure to comment on this episode and let us know what we could have known if we had time turners.
Can we just, like, take a second to act like we've seen the clip.
Like, wasn't that clip amazing? I can't wait for the film.
I love when that one part.
The case.
And the beasts. All the beasts.
They were so fantastic.
They were the most fantastic. But at least we all know we have a hot date for Sunday night.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Except, well, Eleanor, can you see the MTV Movie Awards? Is that a dumb question?
I don't know what the time difference is.
Oh, yeah. How far ahead are you?
Well, it's 7 a.m. now.
What?
Oh, yeah. My God. I'm so sorry.
God bless your soul for doing this with us today. You are a trooper.
You're like 14 hours ahead, so it would air at like 10 a.m. your time on Monday.
Yeah, probably not gonna happen. I'll see it at night.
Oh.
MuggleNet will be posting it, of course, because we are your number one news source. Woo! For Harry Potter, not like in general, you know?
No, in general.
For all world events. Do not consult MuggleNet.
No, we're not that in the know for everything. That's it for the news. I mean, I guess J.K. Rowling can't write on Pottermore North American history every week or 2 weeks. So
yeah, she didn't like tweet anything, did she? I don't think so.
Not of any note.
J.K. Rowling, if you're listening to our podcast, please tweet some stuff that we can talk about.
Yeah.
In our news section. Thank you.
We're desperate.
Hashtag more Sasquatch. I'm going to beat this joke until it's dead, apparently. It's probably been dead. I just, you know. All right. Anyway, Eleanor, are you ready for the Owl Post?
And now it's time for Owl Post. So we got a lovely message from Audrey, and she said actually that she's only on episode 2, but she said that our discussion made her think about Dumbledore and Newt and if they could have worked together when Dumbledore was doing his work on Dragon's Blood. Anyway, I thought that was a pretty great idea. I think there's also been sort of some theories around that Newt might have met Lupin's father through his studies, so...
Huh.
You got some comments on the April Fool's joke. Michael, yay! Happiness!
That sums it up perfectly.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Hogwarts IT guy and Felix Scamander, who, you know, shiftily managed to post exactly the same comment. Yeah, and for episode 8, Igor Zets said...
I wonder who that could be.
Who could possibly be commenting under that username?
I wonder. So I'm not sure if I understand this properly, but basically they said that I have a theory on magic without wands. I wonder if it makes sense, so I'm going to throw it out there. Magic is a power that you're born with, and so you are capable of doing simple tricks and enchantments without anything like a wand. Now, the wand is something used as canalization of that magic power you have, so with that you could kind of manipulate your enchantments and tricks to create other effects such as spells. And Rowling said spells are harder to make without a wand, so I guess that's something that corroborates my theory. Kisses and love, y'all. So kisses back. That was my horrible attempt at saying y'all.
It was beautiful.
I thought that was like the canalization of magic was pretty much an accepted thing in Harry Potter, especially after she sort of talked about the magic you could do wandlessly with African Native American magic. So I don't know. Good job, Igor.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think he's kind of just driving home the point that magic exists without wands, but you can make your magic more like concentrated with the wand, especially because wands have like certain powers of their own. So. I mean, I like it.
And even in Hogwarts, or at Hogwarts, when they were learning wandless magic, like, that was more advanced. Like, that was something they didn't learn in, you know, their first year, because it's something that does take a lot of skill. So I think, I kind of get what's being said, just kind of honing in on what Rowling was saying about spells without wands and the Native Americans.
Well, I mean, she did actually say that the wand is the object through which a wizard channels his or her magic. So, I mean, it's pretty much canon, I thought.
Well.
Well,
that's a whole
Don't go there.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling said it, okay. And last message we got from Hermione EONP, and she said, hope whoever is coughing gets well soon. Shannon, was that you last episode?
I feel like it was,
I don't know.
Was it Aaron coughing last episode and now it's Shannon?
Yeah.
So next it'll probably be me.
It's funny that of the three main hosts, you're the one that hasn't been sick.
Yeah, let's not jinx it. Let's not.
Knock on wood.
Knock on all the wood. Yeah, I think it was Aaron last time because he was in a fevered state.
Poor Aaron.
And he's just off at Hollywood. Yeah,
I think he's feeling better now.
Yeah.
He got well soon.
Too soon.
I don't think he's crying about that cough anymore. Oh, boy.
So, thank you, everyone, for sending in your ideas and for commenting. And thank you. Okay.
Well, then let's move into the main discussion where we just discovered we have a representation from each house. Because I'm on the Hufflepuff side, at least for this discussion. Eleanor Slytherin, Megan's Gryffindor, and Shannon's Ravenclaw. And I could go Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff, but let's Ariel's Hufflepuff for a day. And I mean, okay. When you look, let's just think about it, though. Even the Sorting Hat says, you might belong in Hufflepuff, where they are just and loyal. Those patient Hufflepuffs are true and unafraid of toil. And I'm like, I see that, and I think, that's me. I could be like that, but I don't know.
Did you sort twice on Pottermore? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I sorted the first time, like, when Pottermore first opened, if that's what you want to, like, call it. And then I sorted again right before they stopped, like right before new Pottermore happened.
So you took the original quiz twice.
Yes. Yeah. And I couldn't remember how I answered the first time. And I was just like, this sounds good. And then I got Hufflepuff and I was like, wait a minute. This, I wasn't mad about it. I was just like, this ruins everything I thought I knew about myself.
I know how you feel. I always thought it was Ravenclaw until I took the quiz.
Yeah,
I have like a Ravenclaw scarf, and I'm like, well, what do I do with this now?
Me too. I have a Ravenclaw scarf. I have a Ravenclaw shirt. I named my dog Luna, for goodness sake. It's just, I've got all this stuff. Oh, anyway, sorry. Back to the discussion. So, with Newt, we seem to be coming into the age of Hufflepuff, which for a lot of people is very exciting, because if you go to, I don't know, like Hot Topic or something, they only seem to think there were two houses at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Gryffindor and Slytherin. So that's exciting, at least for the merch possibilities. But for the people who were sorted into Hufflepuff and kind of feel gypped and like, oh, you know, Hufflepuff's just the butt of every joke. It's really not.
I took the sorting quiz 4 times. I got a different house every single time. But you can basically figure out how the quiz is, like, leaning you. So it's sort of...
Which is why you're a Slytherin, because you cheated.
No, the hat takes your choice into account. Come on. This is basic Harry Potter.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Whoa. I just really felt passionate about that for
That's
a second.
So not Gryffindor.
I'm sorry.
Of you. I mean, that was really brave for you to try and fight me on this.
Ooh. Anyway, Ariel, I sincerely apologize.
House Unity.
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
I just momentarily lost my cool.
Anyway, J.K. Rowling herself has stated that Hufflepuff is her favorite house, and her own daughter even said, to the extent that everyone should wish to be a Hufflepuff. And I think that's sweet, and that's cute, and that's why I'm excited to see Newt, Mr. Hufflepuff, roaming the streets of New York. So, as we know, Helga Hufflepuff was the founder of House Hufflepuff. It is the most inclusive among the four houses, valuing hard work, dedication, patience, loyalty, and fair play, rather than a particular aptitude in its members. I think that's part of the reason why people are so quick to joke about, ooh, Hufflepuffs, you know, they're the leftovers, but really it's...
Well, she did say all the rest.
Well, yeah. But what I take from it is just, they have more fluid personality traits, Whereas the other houses, they're very steadfast and firm in what they believe in. And Hufflepuff is more inclusive mm-hmm. in that, you know, they're not afraid to dabble in other things. And, you know, Hufflepuffs can be smart. They can be ambitious. They can be brave. But they don't value those above the others like, say, you know, the other houses would. So that's kind of what I gather. And that's why, you know, good old Helga Hufflepuff saying, you know, it's, you can be in my house.
It's easy to look at the houses and be like, Ravenclaw's the smart house and Gryffindor's the brave house and Slytherin's the evil house. And then Hufflepuff, you're like, oh, what are they?
What are those?
What are those?
I was waiting for someone to say it.
What the hell is a Hufflepuff?
I think, though, that I like this explanation because it sort of says to me that their character, their, like, personality is more important than any, like, sort of mental capability they might have. So, like, a Hufflepuff could be a genius, but their kindness is sort of outweighs that in the long run. So if you're a Hufflepuff, you're made up of some real good moral fiber.
You just had to, moral didn't fiber. You?
Yeah.
Ah, moral fiber.
Because often you see how people are like, well, Peter Pettigrew, he wasn't in Gryffindor, he should have been Hufflepuff. And you're like, no. No. Loyalty, people, please. Oh,
thank you.
Hard work, loyalty, it's fair play. Not things that shout Peter Pettigrew to me.
No. Yeah. That's, what does Peter Pettigrew value?
Himself. Not dying? I don't know.
Yeah. He's a Gryffindor because he is like, oh, they're the cool house, so I want to be a Gryffindor.
I feel like he kind of just rode the coattails of everyone in his life ever. And I'm sure someone's going to comment and hate me for saying that because obviously James, Remus, and Sirius saw something in him that clearly we can't grasp. But
it's true.
It really does make you wonder, what was it? Like, what was it about Peter that landed him in Gryffindor? Okay, I'm about to get into some things. Because if he had met those three boys before the sorting, at best, if we were going in alphabetical order, Sirius and Remus would have been sorted before him. And he could have been maybe like, oh, okay, I want to be in Gryffindor. I'll just, you know, let the hat read my mind on that. And then James would have come after him in Gryffindor, so they would have been complete. But I feel like that's a stretch. Like, we don't know.
I guess we don't know anything about Peter's family, do we?
You know, he had a mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe
someone birthed him.
Well, his
maybe
mom
his whole
got
family
the
was
finger.
Gryffindors. Oh, and he kind of was the opposite of Sirius.
I just
he was like, I want to be a Gryffindor.
I just said his mom got the finger, but what I meant was, like, when he died, that was the only remnant, not like,
yeah,
like the gesture, the finger. Okay.
Literally, his mom got the finger.
Yeah.
When Peter died, his mom got the finger. Like, what? Two insults in one day. This woman can't catch a break. Oh, goodness.
This is, though, like, one of the questions that perpetually stumps me when it comes to Harry Potter is, like, why was Peter Pettigrew in Gryffindor?
Well, I always think that the houses are about what you value and not necessarily what you are. Mm. So, for whatever reason, Pettigrew values bravery and courage, even if he doesn't have it.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's why I ended up in Gryffindor.
I like that.
I remember reading this theory saying something like the new generation was kind of like the old generation in that they were fixing the mistakes. Like Peter Pettigrew and Neville Longbottom were kind of the same in that they were in Gryffindor because they had something in them that they could have lived up to, the bravery. Mm-hmm. And Peter never did. He resorted to cowardice, but Neville stepped up and became, you know, a brave badass.
But you can see it, like, in the first book, like, Neville, like, stands up to Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter Pettigrew never did, and you can see that even in that short scene.
Oh, wow.
And if you think about Neville, like, Neville thinks that he shouldn't be in Gryffindor, because he thinks he's not brave. And it's almost because of that that he's in Gryffindor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's so much like, oh, I'm not good enough for Gryffindor. And so then the hat can recognize, well, you value Gryffindor's traits the most, so you're a Gryffindor.
Well, you guys just blew my mind a little bit. So,
while we're on this great discussion about Hufflepuff, let us continue.
Hufflepuff's a great house.
We are,
but Hufflepuff. Gryffindor, there's some problems.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's. So Helga Hufflepuff, though.
Nice lady.
Sweet Hufflepuff from Valley Broad was one of the four founders of Hogwarts, known for being kind and caring, and especially loved for her food-related charms, which is why I'm pretty sure I am half Hufflepuff, because I love food. Even though it doesn't always love me, I love food, and I would have totally enjoyed being in the Hufflepuff common room right by the kitchens. So, while the other founders prized daring and cunning, Helga reportedly welcomed all students, particularly hard workers, not finders, as you may have been led to believe. Eleanor, you have a comment about the Valley Broad.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys have come across the theory, but it's like, so there's, I think it was in the fourth book, and it says Gryffindor's from Wildmoor, Ravenclaw's from Glen, Hufflepuff's from Valley Broad, and Slytherin's from Fen. And basically, someone's done some crazy amount of analysis. And Gryffindor's sort of, like, Moor is very English, Glen is very Scottish, like Glencoe and all that stuff. And Wales is very mountainous, so it's got a lot of the towns and, like, a lot of the people living there live in valleys. And then, obviously, Fen was a weird one, but possibly Slytherin from Ireland, hopefully. But yeah, I just thought that was kind of an interesting thought that maybe Hufflepuff was Welsh.
Huh, I like that.
Looking at the UK, Wales does seem like the Hufflepuff.
It has to be anywhere.
Well, just because there's no UK reps on here, Wales is very pretty, and they have...
Oh yeah.
They have an ocean, and they have mountains, and they have, as you just said, I just repeated you... And they have this castle, Cardiff Castle. It's very nice. I spent like 8 hours in Wales one time. I saw some sheep.
Yeah, I spent like a day there. I spent the day mostly at the Doctor Who experience.
I was going to say Cardiff, if you didn't go. I didn't. Very disappointed. Okay, Megan, seriously, you're fired.
I'm sorry.
Go away. I'm done with you.
I'm just going to go.
You and your sheep. When you said sheep, that's not what I saw some sheep. I was like, that's not how that sentence usually
ends. They were cute.
I'm a fan of sheep. I'm not hating on sheep.
Have you guys seen the Welsh versions of the Hogwarts houses?
No.
Hogwarts house names.
No.
Oh, I thought you meant like they're the sigils, but the names, yes.
Yeah. Welsh is like curved and flirt. Like, it's really, really weird. It's like Gaelic.
And like Hufflepuffs makes the least sense.
Well,
I mean, I'm sure it makes sense in Welsh, but just reading it as a person who's not familiar with Welsh.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say none of us here really are, but
we're so cultured. We're all just sitting here like, how do you pronounce this?
Are you imitating me?
Hufflepuff is like Oftytuf? Oftytuf, Oftytuf. In Welsh.
Perfect.
How do you know this?
What is this black magic?
But it's spelled Wfftitwf.
And you can read Welsh?
No, it's got a pronunciation next to it.
Okay. Oh, you jerk.
I didn't see any badgers when I was in Wales.
Well,
yeah,
maybe badgers, that's on you. It's not maybe on the badgers.
That's true.
I love how you're just so willing to accept. You're right. Okay, yeah. It's my fault. I didn't seek out the badgers.
Well, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah.
There is a type of sheep called the badger face Welsh mountain sheep.
You're kidding.
Oh my god. I need a picture. Badger face. Badger face.
Does it have like a badger's face?
Welsh badgers. So it's badger face Welsh mountain sheep.
Oh, and there's a whole society apparently for it.
They're so cute!
images.
You guys listening have to look this up.
Oh god,
so
I want
one. Are we sure that the mascot is not just a badger face Welsh mountain sheep?
Look at it though.
It's
it
just
might
shortened
be.
To badger.
It's literally a sheep with the head of a badger. Well, no, not literally, but like it has like black markings and it's got a big black stripe. It looks like it just walked through like a puddle of ink or something.
This is canon. This is now canon.
Anyway, I'm telling you, Hufflepuff, if you look this up, your day will be better.
Oh, so cute. I wonder if Newt ever was interested in the badger face Welsh sheep.
Badger face Welsh mountain sheep.
Mountain sheep. Okay. Oh, it's close. I mean, is it really important that it came from the mountain?
You know, here's one that calls it the Welsh mountain badger face sheep. So Whoa. What order do the words go in?
Just as long as they're sheep and face and badger, I guess it works somehow.
So I'm still trying to learn about badgers in Wales, and this website, Badgers in Wales, says, the timid badger has suffered persecution for many centuries.
Aww. That's why it's the mascot.
Yeah, it says that early Welsh tales contain a reference to mistreatment of the animal, and it may be supposed that the badger's nocturnal lifestyle and shyness made ancient man suspicious that it represented the forces of darkness.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's me.
No, is there a single thing this woman doesn't research?
I feel like maybe sometimes she's just like, this sounds good, and we look so deeply into it, and we're like, she's a genius.
Badgers remained practically friendless in Britain until 1973, when the Badgers Act offered them a degree of protection.
Ah!
The Badgers Act?
Babies!
The Badgers.
See, really, I told though, you guys Wales was good.
I didn't question it, don't worry.
Shannon was actually technically there longer than I was, so.
Yeah, I spent the night. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I only spent the day, so.
So out. There are badgers in Wales, and they have faced persecution, and
man,
must be protected.
It's hard out here for a badger. So, the famous Hufflepuffs through the ages. Naturally, Helga Hufflepuff is at the top of the list, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Then we have Bridget Winlock, who was a famous 13th century witch who was very skilled in arithmancy. Is that how you nice. Pronounce it? I feel like I got it correct this one time, and I'm so. Like, hmm?
That's how I pronounce it in my head.
It's probably like arithmancy.
I know.
No, I think it's arithmancy.
Arithmancy. Anyway, she seemed to be very bright, but she was very protective of her theorems, so she wrote many of them down in invisible ink, making them very easy to misplace. So, not good, Bridget, not good. But she was the first, and I find this surprising, the first to discover the magical significance of the number 7, and that's all the information we get. There's no more. Nothing else.
Maybe we'll learn more.
No.
I don't know why we would, but
I mean, we know enough from the Harry Potter series to know that 7 is indeed a magical number, but why?
I wonder how 7 will come up in Fantastic Beasts.
True.
Maybe they'll make 7 movies.
Surprise!
Maybe he has to catch, like, 7 beasts.
Ooh, maybe.
I feel like that's so many. Oh, I'm
For
bleeding.
A trilogy.
Naturally, next on the list, magizoologist Newton. Artemis, Fido Scamander.
Who's Newt, that guy?
Newt to his readers. Wouldn't it be Newt to his friends? Like, to his readers, they'd just be like, well, they wouldn't call him Newton, Artemis, Fido Scamander.
Oh my
Scamander,
god. He's but. Like, oh, okay, so writing this book, I'm gonna call myself Newt Scamander. And his friends are like, Newton. Oh my god. It's like, no, guys, start calling me Newt. It sounds way cooler. Oh my god, Newton.
They're
it's
over
gonna
there
work
in,
for me,
in 1926,
promise.
Like, oh my god, Newton. I don't know why people in 1926 automatically have British accents. That's,
yeah, yeah.
That's correct.
People are like, ah, Newton, you crazy cat.
Yeah, yeah, that's more like it. Wow.
I know this has nothing to do with Hufflepuff, but I just noticed that one of his middle names is Artemis. I mean, I like knew that, but I didn't consciously think about how Artemis is, first of all, a female goddess.
Oh, bless his heart.
But she's the goddess of the hunt. Mm. She's very associated with nature.
And Fido is very often a beast's name.
Yeah, and associated with bows and arrows and the moon. Stags.
Mm.
That's really cool.
Could be interesting.
I like that sometimes with the historical names, it can get a bit much in stories, but, you know, it's one of his middle names, so it's okay. But I like that she chose one that wasn't, that didn't start off as a guy's name. And
yeah.
I don't know. I like names like that.
Well, and his name's already Newt Scamander, so, like, I feel like we have passed the danger of going over the top with this.
Yeah. We're talking about the lady who gave Albus a million middle names, Dumbledore.
Brian.
That's my favorite.
Brian. If he had just, but can you imagine if he was like, forget all of my other names, I'm going to go by Brian Dumbledore.
Man, I would.
Professor Brian Dumbledore.
Well, Artemis is associated with a lot of things that I think are associated with Hufflepuff.
Nature. That's true.
And animals.
Yeah.
And with, not I mean, really Newt food, specifically.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of Newt specifically, I mean, Artemis was a goddess of the moon. And I do, like, and Newt obviously did the werewolf register. I have no idea if that's
correct,
but putting it out there.
I'm going to say it probably is.
Yes, considering there's a character named Remus Lupin who is a werewolf.
Woman knows her moon words.
Yeah. Huh. I never noticed that connection before, all the different moon names.
Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe that's something, well, we can't really discuss it on Fantastic Beasts, but maybe that's something we can talk about on our own time.
I don't know. Main discussions are hard to come by.
Now right, they are.
I think this one's going on really well.
Yeah.
So who else is on this list? We'll come back to Newt.
Yeah.
We've also got Pomona Sprout. Who's that?
The professor of herbology at Hogwarts during the time that Harry attended. Okay, about this list, I just want to say quickly how the famous Hufflepuffs don't seem to stick to one particular subject that they thrive in, such as Bridget with her arithmancy, Newt with his beasts, obviously. Then we've got Pomona Sprout with herbology. I like that they seem to be very all over the place.
And that's next on the list is Cedric, who's, you know, good at Quidditch and sports. And then Tonks, who's an Auror. So, yeah. Very diverse talents.
Which is why it's so important that Hufflepuff did include all of these people so they could reach their full potential. Oh, and then we get the Fat Friar, who is the house ghost, of course. He was executed by Senior Churchmont for curing some peasants of the pox with the poke of a stick, quote, and pulling rabbits out of the communion cup.
Oh my gosh.
Which I think is, if you're gonna get executed by something, that's a really... Has anyone seen Misfits?
Yes.
You know how Nathan's always going on about, oh, I'm in for, you know, stealing from Pick and Mix, or Pick and, whatever it's called, Pick and Mix. And that's not, you know, like, really what happened, obviously. You come to find out. But this, I'm like,
he that's
horrible.
He was just pulling rabbits out of things.
I'm like, that's so sad. Why? And was Myrtle in Hufflepuff? I thought she was in Ravenclaw.
No, she's in Ravenclaw.
Okay, because they referenced, he seems like a jolly old ghost, particularly if you compare him to Moaning Myrtle. I was like, I don't think she's Hufflepuff, but I think they're just comparing in general.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Malfoy seems particularly jolly if you compare him to Moaning Myrtle.
I don't really understand why the Fat Friar came back as a ghost. Like, all the other ghosts seem like they kind of had a reason why they ended up coming back, because, you know, they're unhappy or something. But the Fat Friar is like, I don't know, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I'd like to see more from him.
I want to see more of his work.
Yeah.
More of those rabbits and... here in the pox.
Because, yeah, he has to have some kind of unfinished business or be, like, scared to move on. Well, and it's interesting that the Fat Friar comes back as a ghost because he's got this connection to religion.
Ah.
And so you'd think he'd be like, ah, yes, the afterlife.
I don't know. It doesn't appear from this short paragraph as though he was particularly serious about it. If he's pulling rabbits out of the communion cup, like, that sounds like a Catholic thing to me. Maybe it's Anglican, but that's the sort of artifact in the church that you don't mess with. Like, no one but the priest touches it. Like, they, you know, it's a serious thing. So for him to be pulling rabbits out of it would suggest to me that he's not really into it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, at the same time, he's obviously very kind. And my immediate theory is that, like, a child, maybe, you know, someone close to them died. And so the way that he, like, tried to cheer them up was, like, by doing that. Like, that's the immediate sort of way I would.
Yeah, I think he's trying to, like, help people.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying, like, he was a bad dude. I'm just saying that whichever religion he was a part of, like, the communion cup, like, you could easily pull rabbits out of something else. Yeah. So if he's making jokes with it, then he's not, like, as invested in the religion as maybe they would have you think.
Yeah.
With his status as a friar. I don't know. That's my two cents.
So who of all these Hufflepuffs do we think is the most, like, Newt?
My initial reaction was to say Cedric Diggory. I don't know why. But it seems like he's going to be all going on adventures and...
It feels like they're both pure of heart, but Newt's nerdier.
Well, was Hagrid not a Hufflepuff?
No.
Gryffindor.
Oh, okay.
And then we have Tonks, who, you know, is an Auror.
Right.
But a very, like, clumsy, silly Auror.
I can see that from Newt.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
He strikes me as clumsy and silly.
Well, and Eddie Redmayne's gonna nail that. I'm so excited. Oh, yeah.
So, knowing what we know about the House of Hufflepuff and the famous Hufflepuffs, and even just speculating just now about maybe the possible combinations of famous Hufflepuffs that Newt could be, how do we think this, I don't want to say, like, upbringing, but obviously it has some sort of effect on how, you know, what house a certain wizard was in, how it affects their future, you know. What do we think it means for Newt, how being in Hufflepuff would make him as a person? Because I personally think what he's going to represent the most is dedication and hard work, but also the fairness. Even in his book, you know, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, how he classifies all these beasts and how he goes through the different laws that were set, and even his involvement in some of these laws as well. I think he very much wanted some semblance of structure for the beasts.
He strikes me as the kind of person who is involved in the government, not because he likes the government, but because he wants it to do good things.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have to be that person.
Yeah.
I think his open-mindedness is going to be important. Like, in the Harry Potter series, there were characters that saw creatures as being sort of below them, and characters that treated them with respect, regardless of whether they were on the good side or the bad side or whatever. And Harry was one of the characters that treated beasts with respect, like Buckbeak and Dobby and all that. From that, he's able to sort of learn more about them, and I think that I just get that feeling that that's what Newt is going to be like, too. Somebody who doesn't automatically try to, like, control them or put them in some sort of, like, demeaning place. I think he's going to want to, like, actually try to learn from them and get to know them. And that seems very Hufflepuffy to me.
Well, also, it makes sense. Because, I mean, he was brought up with... I mean, you just mentioned Buckbeak, and he was brought up with hippogriffs. Mm-hmm. And hippogriffs are, you know, you have to respect them, and they have to trust you. So he would have learnt from a really early age that respect and trust is the way to get animals or anyone to do anything for you or, you know, cooperate with them. So, like, I think you can sort of see from that upbringing that I think that's, like, I don't know, for me, I think from what I understand, I think Newt will be very much about trust and respect.
Yeah. I almost forgot the hippogriff farm aspect of his upbringing.
I really want a flashback with, like, little Newt and, like, a little hippogriff foal.
Baby Newt with baby hippogriffs is what I need.
But yeah, that's a very good point that if you're growing up around hippogriffs, I mean, I'm sure he worked with them, you know, I'm just imagining a farm, and he had to help his mom take care of the hippogriffs, so he would have had to learn that respect.
Yeah.
And they would learn to respect him.
Hippogriffs are cool like that.
Yeah, hippogriffs. That's why their name is so similar to Hufflepuff, because it's the cool house. Am I right?
Am I right or am I right?
Hey.
If you don't know, now you know.
So that's it for today's main discussion. If you have any comments or anything you want to say about anything we have said or missed completely, please be sure to comment on the Speak BC comment section.
So for today's Time Turner segment, I figured we could talk about, like, women in the 1920s because it's an all-ladies show.
Oh, yeah.
And women's rights were a big thing in the 1920s. So the 19th Amendment, which was the women's right to vote, was officially passed on August 26, 1920. And it said, "The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." And so slowly every state in the U.S. ratified this. I did not know that Mississippi did not ratify it until 1984.
I didn't know that either.
Let's not even talk about my neighbors from the South right now. Like, they just...
Oh, man.
I'm not happy with them.
But why?
I think most states ratified it in the 20s. Some of them took a while. And then
Mississippi was just like, it wasn't even on their minds.
They were just lazy.
Yeah.
They were too busy eating the yummy things.
Yeah.
What are the yummy things?
The southern food is yummy.
Yeah, but Mississippi's not like, I don't know. I wouldn't go to Mississippi for good food. Like,
they were distracted by the river.
Not saying that they have bad food. I'm just saying when I think of southern food, I think of...
Mississippi controversy. Speak Beastie.
Everyone in Mississippi's gonna hate me now.
I've never actually been to Mississippi. I just kind of lump all the southern states together. Maybe I shouldn't do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Ooh.
Burn.
But it's worth noting that, okay, so technically the 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote, but... you know, like I said, it took a while for it to be ratified in every state, so people were still trying to stop women from voting, and, it mostly at first just gave white women the right to vote. You know, black women didn't really get the rights until the civil rights movement, and it varied for different people of color. So also in the 1920s, we've mentioned flappers before, because... women's fashion changed a lot. You know, we think of the 1920s, we think of flappers, but most women in the 1920s were not flappers, but they were just so outrageous that everybody couldn't stop talking about them. And being a flapper was all about public expression, and it was a big deal because they, like, smoke and drank. What?
Women don't do that.
That's crazy. The number of working women increased by 25% around the 20s, thanks to World War I, because all the men left, and someone had to do their jobs. Also in the 1920s, there was a rise in birth control, and there were better divorce laws, so women were just getting their rights left and right.
Oh, how nice. That was real good.
Yeah, so we didn't have to, like, be pregnant all the time and married to people we didn't like.
Which is a nice. Plus, I think.
Yeah.
It's a bonus.
So I couldn't find anything, like, specific that happened in 1926 when Fantastic Beasts takes place. But we have seen that there are quite a few women in the movies. Well, I mean, there's at least, like, four. Five, I guess, I can think of. Queenie and Tina, yes. Obviously. The woman who is head of Makusa, the leader of the Second Salemers, whose name I can't remember. And then we know that we're going to see Tina and Queenie's mother.
Just
not sure exactly how that's going to work, but lots of ladies.
Yes, indeed.
So from what we've seen of... our ladies. I think Queenie looks like a flapper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's even been described that way. And Tina is in more normal clothes.
Hey, let's not say normal. Let's just say, like, conservative.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I love the way Queenie's dressed.
Yeah, I love both their clothes.
She looks just so fabulous. Like, I want to be her.
I mean, there are a lot of female characters, it seems like. So I wonder if this whole, like, feminism movement is going to be, like, a significant factor in the film.
Yeah,
or I wonder if it's said like eight times.
If you hadn't brought attention to it, I wouldn't have noticed.
Sorry.
And that's so we're it's in a time where so women have technically gotten the right to vote. Oh, I should have looked up exactly when New York ratified it. I think they ratified it pretty early on, though.
They seem to be quick on the uptake for most things.
Yeah, New York must have ratified the amendment in the first wave.
Nice.
I was just checking.
Good for New York.
High five to 1920s New York.
Not so much high five to Mississippi, though. What's that about?
Oh, Mississippi. But if you're listening in Mississippi, we love you. You're great.
We love you listening. As a person. Yes.
That's just a whole different argument we can't even get into right now.
Are we ready to move on?
I think so.
Yes, Megan, it's your time to shine.
Woo! Okay, so I took over the Newt case for Aaron this week, and I picked something that is totally not like what he would pick at all. Sorry, Aaron.
Yay!
I picked the Diracol. I believe that's how you say it. Its Ministry of Magic classification is XX for harmless slash maybe domesticated. And the Diracol originated in Mauritius. It is a plump-bodied, fluffy-feathered, flightless bird, and it is remarkable for its method of escaping danger, because it can vanish in a puff of feathers and reappear elsewhere. The phoenix shares this ability. See page 32 of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, or Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Interestingly, Muggles were once fully aware of the existence of the Diracol, though they knew it by the name of Dodo. Unaware that the Diracol could vanish at will, Muggles believe they have hunted the species to extinction. As this seems to have raised Muggle awareness of the dangers of slaying their fellow creatures, the International Confederation of Wizards has never deemed it appropriate that the Muggle should be made aware of the continued existence of the Diracol.
Okay, I'm gonna cry.
I know. So, in this universe, the Dodo bird still exists. It's just called a Diracol.
That just warms my heart.
I know, right?
Love to see one of these in Fantastic Beasts.
It's just hanging out, and if it finds that it's dangerous, it can just leave, go somewhere else.
It pretty much just apparates.
Yep.
But like that's a power I want.
I know. but I felt that the interesting component of this was the fact that wizards had noticed that Muggles were treating each other better. Because they thought that they had hunted this bird into extinction, and they just decided not to say anything. So, it's interesting, though, that, I mean, this book was published, what, like, late 20s, early 30s?
1927.
Okay. So, it doesn't seem to have raised that much Muggle awareness of the dangers of slaying their fellow creatures, because we're right on the cusp of two world wars here.
Yeah.
But I just like the concept that wizards are like, oh, look at them, they're learning. Let's not tell them. Yeah.
We'll let this one slide.
Maybe that comes up in Fantastic Beasts. Maybe, you know, they're all fighting and then Newt comes in with a Diracol and is like, look.
I hope.
Or dodo bird.
I hope there's just a random dodo bird that's like, you know what? I need to get out of here. And just, like, vanishes.
I hope it talks and says that.
Like, you know what? I'ma go.
I'm done with this. I'll see you guys later.
That's Newt's other sidekick, a Diracol that just sits on his shoulder and then vanishes every time there's danger.
Oh gosh, I can't handle the cuteness.
And Newt's like, come on! Again.
Oh, a Niffler and a Diracol.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want in life.
We've created the cutest beast movie in the world.
And the Niffler would be like, no, take me with you.
And the Diracol would be like, peace.
There's nothing shiny here. They're all yelling at each other.
Why is the... Which one was that? The Niffler?
That was the Niffler.
Why is he like the girl in Mean Girls?
Which girl in Mean Girls?
Why can't we all just...
Oh, yes. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Remember to send us your news stories, fantastic theories, comments, questions, definitely K-pop remixes, or pretty much anything you could possibly want to send us. And thank you to Megan and Eleanor for being our hosts today.
You're extremely welcome.
And no thank you to Aaron for...
Yeah. Stupid Aaron.
In Hollywood or whatever.
Whatever.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie if you liked what we said today. Also Facebook, which is facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. We've got a Tumblr too, which is speakbeastie.podcast.tumblr.com. We are also on Patreon, so if you feel like donating to our cause, you can find us there. And if you can leave us a review on iTunes, we would really, really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Eleanor. Case closed!